This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Julian Ng and Wong Xiaoning. It is Wednesday, the 15th of May, and we're halfway through the week. How do you guys feel?
Wonderful. We're halfway through the week, halfway through the month, and I believe halfway through the year as well.
Almost.
That's true.
Yeah, June is coming fast.
Yeah, we're nearly into the second half of the year.
Staggering.
It's just breezed by.
Exactly.
Yeah, it didn't even seem...
Breezed by so fast, we're already at the fifth episode of Game of Thrones.
That's right.
I like the way
you follow Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
don't
your
you?
Life is according to Game of Thrones, Julian.
Yes, I watched
it's measured
the fifth
by
one
how
yesterday.
Many episodes. No
yeah,
spoilers.
You got to watch before you're being spoiled by other people.
Either that or you just embrace the spoiler life and
exactly,
just,
which is not a good life.
Okay, but we've got lots of stories for you this morning. So what are we going to be talking about?
Well, I'm going to ask you which is more important to you, privacy or convenience? And apparently in today's world, you can't have both.
Yes, that's right. And talking about the best of all worlds, Dr. Mahathir, our Prime Minister, wants all MPs to declare their assets. I think this was a rule that was, or a requirement that was previously restricted to cabinet members. Mm-hmm. And now it's going to be open up to all MPs.
Yes, if it goes through the Dewan Rakyat. So some fascinating discussions for you. So please do let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio if you have any thoughts. But right after this, we're going to be talking about money, which makes the world go round. But taking you there is Shakedown Street by The Grateful Dead, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was the 59th Street Bridge song by Simon and Garfunkel. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Julian Ng and Wong Xiaoning. Now, being a millionaire is no longer an immediate indication of being rich. So according to the Charles Schwab Modern Wealth Survey, which looked at attitudes towards wealthiness in America, the average opinion on what it means to have wealth is to have about $2.3 million. So that's about the 20 times more than the median household net worth in the US, by the way. And to be just financially comfortable, the attitudes averaged at about $1.1 million. So... nowadays, if you're a millionaire in the US, you're just basically comfortable. You're not wealthy.
Yeah, I think it's inflation has eaten away at what it means to be a millionaire. It doesn't mean much now. And I think this is the extreme version of the belanja one, which is like how much you can survive in a Malaysian household with a few thousand bucks, right? So I think really it's important to define in our heads what it means to be wealthy. And to me, it's not about the dollar value. It's really about what you don't...
what you can get with that money.
And also what... It's really about the intangible things in life, you know, your relationships with your friends and family and how you really define happiness, because wealth doesn't equal happiness, right? But knowing Charles Schwab, which is... A kind of broker, banker/banker, right?
Online broker.
They want you to think about these things so that they can make more money out of you.
But I think what's interesting about this article is that the generations define wealth differently, right? Mm-hmm. So the baby boomers have the highest number at $2.6 million, and then
they know better, right?
Yeah, they know better. But I think if you did this survey in Malaysia, would you get the same results? And I think it's probably going to be quite similar, actually.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And actually, when you think about it, for a lot of urbanites in KL, if you consider the value of your house, most people are quite well off. But you're talking about the concentrated urban KL, because property
don't,
prices
don't get
are
me
crazy.
Started on that, Shani. How do you spend your property anyway?
Yeah.
That's another discussion, right?
Yeah, but actually, that was another thing that was highlighted in the survey. It's what people spend their money on. And 50% of Americans said that if they got a surprise windfall of like $1 million, they would spend it on property. What do you think about this, Julie? I know you don't really like
I think
the
it's
idea.
A bad idea.
There we go.
I think it's a bad idea. You can invest that. It really depends on how much $1 million would make up... to your total property, right? Mm-hmm. To your total wealth. I mean, if you're worth 10 million, $1 million being spent on a property is nothing. But if you have nothing and you spend all of that on property, it's a little bit too much, I think.
But, you know, we grow. It's a very Asian thing, right, to want to own your own home, I think. And it's probably drilled into you when you're quite young.
I mean, clearly it's not only an Asian thing if 50% of Americans are doing it too.
Issues. Yeah, there are too many issues with that. If that becomes kind of cultural inertia that you have to own your property, if it's an Asian thing, I think it's very, very problematic. I mean, I'm watching Tiny House Nation on Netflix. I'm actually speed watching it. I'm just fast forwarding all those human interest elements and going directly into the design aspects. And it's really surprising. And I find it so fascinating that you can have so much within a small space. 300 square feet or less, right? I think it's so fascinating.
So it's like Marie Kondo of housing. You don't really need so much,
definitely,
right?
Definitely. They look at your stuff as well. So that's Marie Kondo-ish.
Yeah, because the tiny houses that they feature on Tiny House Nation, they are basically about 300 square feet. And people are downsizing from houses that are 1,800, 2,000 square feet. And you have to basically put your belongings into piles of definitely taking with you, definitely not taking with you, and maybe. But, you know, here's a spoiler, the maybe pile's not coming.
Actually, some of them are less than 300 square feet, the one that don't expand. When you expand it, then it's about 300 square feet, which is the size of a very big hotel room. But if you don't expand it, if you're living alone or just a couple, that's enough, actually.
I'm sorry, I can't imagine living in 300 square feet like all the time. Maybe for a few days.
They have people like you on the show as well who oppose this kind of small space.
And are they converts after a while?
Yes. You should watch it.
Okay, I will watch it.
What's also interesting there is that it also displays the generational differences, because a lot of the people who are going for these much smaller houses, you know, 250 to 300 square feet, they tend to be, I think generally they're sort of under 40, and then their parents push back quite hard against them. Some of them because they've lived in small houses, and then they're like, why would you want to go small when you can house? Yeah, you know, you have a house, you have lots of space. But realistically, how much of that space in our own houses do we actually use?
It's true. I mean, if you look in Hong Kong, people live in tiny houses, right?
Shoe boxes,
yeah, because the price of houses is too expensive.
Mm-hmm. And also the interesting thing is that they make use of the outdoors, right? Which the land they don't own, but is actually part of nature, part of the commons, which you can very easily have access to. So you don't need to buy them or own them. You can place your tiny house right in the middle of beautiful nature. But I just want to say this other thing, right? I've done some calculations, and $1 million, for example, $1 million US dollars, you can spend $10,000 a month for 10 years if you reinvest it at 5% per annum. And you inflate that, right? You inflation adjust that 10,000 by 2% every year, right?
So, well, your inflation number is quite low, though, Julian.
2%. But if you're retired, you don't need to spend on cashmere scarves and and go traveling on luxe transportation modes, right?
I know who that's targeted at.
But look, so if you can survive with that kind of limitations, $10,000 a month for 10 years, or $5,000 for 20 years, inflation adjusted, you answer the question of whether that's enough or not.
Okay, well, let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. You can tell us how much money do you need to be wealthy. We'd love to hear from you. So stay tuned for more discussions after this at BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Arcade Fire with Ready to Start. And you're here on The Morning Run with Lynn, Julian and Shaoning. Now, we're all a little bit paranoid that one day machines are going to take over the world, right? So we should all stock up on canned food because someone's going to build a Skynet and the world is going to end.
Yes.
I've watched many episodes of Terminator, so I'm still fearful of the machines and the computers.
Yeah, I think Terminator has a lot to do with our distrust of machines.
But what's scary here is that I don't think we think you're joking. We believe you.
As you should, Julian. But see, the important thing here is that while we distrust machines, everyone does to a certain extent, a lot of us still go out and buy them anyway. You know, we turn around and we buy that fancy fancy camera that you put in your house so you can watch your pet while you're away. But realistically, that camera can also be used to watch you. And yet, we still fall for it. So there's this survey by Consumers International that highlights this odd contradiction in human behavior. So 75% of the people they polled in 6 countries said that they don't trust the way that their data is shared by smart devices, but 70% had them anyway. So why do we do this?
I think it's going to pose a very big problem for people who are setting up the laws to curb this kind of privacy issues, because we don't really know what we want. And if we don't know what we want, how are the politicians, the lawmakers, going to set the boundaries?
Who is policing who, right, at the end of the day?
Yeah, it's not only that, mm-hmm. it's our contradictory behavior, right? We want to use these devices, but we don't want to give up our privacy. And we're scared about security.
It's true. I mean, but at the end of the day, we're so used to convenience of these devices, mm-hmm. right? And some of the devices, like those baby watching, you know?
Yes, the baby monitors.
Yeah, the baby monitors. I mean, a lot of parents couldn't do without it. Can you imagine? I mean, if you didn't have one. Or even like what you said, the alarm systems where you can watch CCTV from mm-hmm. remotely, right, to see what's happening.
Yes.
Although I think people are missing the punchline when Lynn says she's watching her pets.
What's the punchline?
You said that you were watching your pets on the
scene. I didn't. Oh, I was going to say that actually I don't. But no, my family does have a camera in the house specifically so that they can watch the pets when they're away.
See, I think those are some of the more obvious issues of privacy where you have an actual camera that mm-hmm. Hackers can hack into, right?
But it's like the smart doorbells as well, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But there are more surreptitious ways that your privacy can be exposed. For example, if you went onto Google, you know, Google tracks every single thing that you do. Mm-hmm. And a few minutes later, you go on Facebook, that advertisement pops up for something that you've just searched seconds ago. And that's scary.
It's true.
That kind of thing is scary.
Yeah, it's really true, because I was looking at some cars and then instantly all these ads popped up for all these different cars on Facebook. It's like as if they communicated with each other instantaneously.
They do. Yeah. And it's fitness trackers as well. So, you know, it's not just if you're using a wearable. If you're using a wearable, then obviously you know that it's collecting your data. But even fitness tracking apps on your phones that track how many steps you take, how many calories you burn, all of that is data. And how many of us, we know when the little pop-up comes up on our phones, on our computers that says, you're giving permission for your app to be shared with this, you know, for analysis purposes, how many of us just click yes? I know I do. And it's one of the things that I do just because I want to use the app, so I don't, it's not immediately apparent what's going to be the result of this, which is that my data is going to be shared with some think tank halfway across the world.
Okay, this might sound like a silly question, but apart from the very obvious of your credit card information being stolen, what is the disadvantage of your other data being stolen? Like if it is going to be used for research and things like that, would you be still as suspicious of this kind of devices?
I'm as suspicious of everything, Julian.
Okay, but what is the worst that can happen?
I don't like this targeted advertising.
Okay.
I think it encourages people to maybe buy things they don't need. And influence people to think in a particular way.
But for example, Fitbit, right, which has mm-hmm. the largest sleep data in the world or in history, they can launch into research that can be very beneficial for humankind. You know, is that really a bad thing? I'm not for either side. I'm still thinking this out.
But would you suddenly get advertisements for every sleep gadget out there?
To give up something for the greater good, I'm not sure if that's a bad thing.
But advertising here, when we're talking about advertising, we're not just talking about things that get people to buy physical items. We're also talking about things that get people to buy into ideas. So political advertising on social media is another example that your data can be used to try and influence the way you think. And that's not, I disagree with political advertising completely. Anyway, tell us what you think. Do you buy smart devices even though they can spy on you? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Coming up next is Stormy Weather by Etta James, followed later by the 6:30 news. So stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, that was Don't Stand So Close to Me by The Police, and you're here on The Morning Run with Lynn, Julian and Shaoning. Now, federal lawmakers must now declare their net worth of themselves and their families to the Malaysian Anti-Corruption Commission. Oh, this is at least a proposal from the Governance Integrity and Anti-Corruption Centre that it may now be extended to opposition lawmakers, because I think previously this was declaring your net worth and your assets was something that was limited to the cabinet, but now may be extended to all MPs in the Dewan Rakyat.
I think it's an excellent tactic by the Mahathir government, apart from the very obvious that this is a good thing, right? If all the lawmakers and government civil servants reveal their assets. But it was a good move by Dr. Mahathir to sort of have an impact on future change of governments. Because then if you've done this once, your assets would have been revealed and this kind of information can be used for future purposes, right? To really question any corrupt, perhaps, future governments. And I think that it will also do the job of outing in the Dewan Rakyat anybody who votes against this. Like, what is the reason?
What have you got to hide?
Yeah, why are you voting against this?
It's true. I'm like, why would you? If you have nothing to hide, then you should vote for it, right? Because it just means a cleaner government, and you should be able to account for all your wealth, unless your wealth was accumulated in some sort of suspicious manner, I guess. But this is common practice in other countries. I mean, like in the UK, if I'm not wrong,
developed nations.
Yeah, and it should be implemented in Malaysia, but it has to go through Parliament, right?
It has to go through the Dewan Rakyat Speaker at the moment. So we're going to see how that turns out. It's also quite common practice amongst multinationals in the private sector, I believe, because you're not allowed to have dinner, have someone treat you to dinner, for example, without declaring the value of that dinner in some companies.
Yes, like for fund managers and brokers, right? We're not allowed to. Well, I'm no longer a fund manager. We used to have to declare all our gifts. Anything above,
did you get a lot?
I confess, I had my fair share of like Chinese New Year hampers.
It's the seasonal hampers.
But you normally just divide it out in the office. But anything above, if I'm not wrong, 250 ringgit, you have to declare.
Yeah,
which I think is quite good practice, if you ask me.
That's why Dr. Mahathir also declared his one ton of dodol, right?
No, it was never sent. Somebody wanted to send it to him, but he kind of declined. I can't imagine how much one ton.
I wouldn't be surprised why he would decline that.
Where would you store it all?
Exactly. How would you eat it all? Okay, maybe it's just me that I don't really like dodol, so I'm like, no. But apparently he's also received a lot of fruit hampers, which is a little bit of a problem considering it's Ramadan and he has to somehow finish all these fruits.
I remember at one time China kept sending pandas around the world as a diplomatic gesture. I'm like, people are just saying, like, stop sending us pandas, you know?
I don't think they were sending pandas for you to keep in your backyard, Julian.
Yeah, to the zoos or whatever. It's not easy to maintain pandas. But I'm also wondering when we're going to do the analysis of the people who have declared their wealth, the politicians who have declared their wealth, right? For example, I think it was Mahathir to declare his assets, 30, 40 million bucks. Not that it's not legit, but it's time we start looking into and examining how this wealth came about. And we might learn a thing or two, right? This might be a ringgit and cents thing where we learn how to be financially independent, right? 30 million. How did the Prime Minister accumulate, for example, his wealth of 30, 40 million? He was a practicing doctor and then he became a politician, Prime Minister. And I'm looking forward to other government civil servants, for example, Daim, revealing his wealth. Taib in Sarawak, the Chief Minister of Sarawak, revealing his wealth. And perhaps we could learn something from that about how to gain financial independence, right?
Tun Daim may not have to declare his wealth, considering he's no longer a federal lawmaker. I'm not sure whether the Council of Eminent Persons would be included under the umbrella of lawmaker, considering they're not really an official elected body.
Yeah, and Taib is no longer Chief Minister. But I think
he's still an MP.
He's governor of Sarawak, right?
Yeah.
Yes, he is. Now, it's
like, is he still an MP? No, right?
No,
oh,
I don't think so. Now, but I agree with you. I think it should be top civil servants also.
I definitely agree. Now, this is only one proposal, of course, that the GIACC has put forward. Other proposals include imposing a limit on gift acceptance, so maybe one ton of dodol may not qualify as a acceptable gift. Implementing an anti-corruption plan at an organizational level, holding ministerial level meetings on governance integrity and anti-corruption, and increasing the transparency for public procurement. And I think this is another major sticking point here, because we, you know, in the past we've seen a lot of things awarded through direct negotiations, and I think the government is now making strides towards having that open tender, transparent procurement process, but it's definitely a work in progress. Now, guys, we also have a poll running in relation to our previous discussion on smart devices, and we're asking, do you forego privacy for convenience? So do tell us which is more important to you. You can find that poll on the BFM Twitter, and also you can WhatsApp us if you have any thoughts on 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be coming back with more stories after this. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Cher with Gypsies, Tramps and Thieves. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Julian and Xiao Ning. Thanks for your votes on our poll on our BFM Twitter. We also have a tweet from Zhao Ying who says that Taib is now Yang di-Pertuan Negeri Sarawak. He's no longer the unelected Wakil Rakyat. Chief Minister today is Datuk Patinggi Abang Johari Oping. Yes,
doesn't absolve him from declaring his assets, I think.
Yeah, I think because then it should be extended to... as Xiao Ning suggested, top-level officials rather than just federal lawmakers and cabinet members. Right?
If we go back to DIME and the Council of Eminent Persons, mm-hmm. I think it's still required, because you have DIME going around negotiating the ECRL and talking to Singapore and so on about the water. I think it's important because the CEP, I think it's like the Council of the Jedi, right? Looking over the ministers and what they do. So I think it's legitimate that they reveal their assets.
Yeah, basically, if you're in a position of power and that your decisions your decisions will affect the well-being of the people, then you should be transparent about it, essentially, I think. Now, we also asked, do you forego privacy for convenience? Which is more important to you? And this was on a poll on BFM Twitter. And the options were privacy, convenience, and I don't care. Now, I don't care is at 11% of the almost 30 votes we've received so far. The overwhelming majority seems to have voted for privacy over convenience. So we've got privacy at just under 60%, convenience at 30%, and I don't care at 11%. But I wonder how many of these people who voted privacy on our poll did so on a smart device.
Which is also spying on you, by the way.
Quite contradictory, yeah. The voters, yes. Because you're making an actual vote on an actual poll, but you have also voted with your money and with your feet of using that smart device, using social media, in which case you have voted to give up some of your privacy.
But I wonder whether when you buy these devices, whether you are aware that these devices, you know, they are collecting data on you. So, for example, if you buy the Amazon or Google speaker, mm-hmm. many people don't realize that it comes with a 55-pager terms and conditions. And embedded in that terms and conditions is this privacy clause. So when you buy the device, right, you log in and register. And then, you know, you see the terms and conditions. And trust me, everyone just clicks yes.
Yep.
Yep.
No
right?
one ever downloads it, prints it out and read it and with a highlighter marker.
Because it would take hours.
Yeah. No, I just think it's boring. It's just too excruciatingly boring. So we need the law to step in to protect us.
Yeah, I think there was a conversation as well about the use of legal jargon in terms and conditions, right?
Yes.
I think this happened a little while ago. I'm not sure what necessarily came out of that. It was just because terms and conditions agreements can be so couched in legalese that people don't actually necessarily understand what rights they may be giving up, even if they do take the time to read 55 pages of terms and conditions.
And who do you negotiate with, even if you don't agree with the terms and conditions?
Yeah, the only option is not to use Facebook or Twitter or buy into that Fitbit.
You can't like write in and say, I don't agree with clause 3.21AB. who's going to reply you?
Exactly. So it's not on, right? Because you have to be on social media.
But we could just not use these devices, right?
Are you kidding?
There was a hypothetical question, hypothetical statement, Julian, because I definitely use all of these. And why do I use it? You know, it's partially for convenience and partially because of peer pressure, I think. Because you see people around you using smartphones, the latest new gadgets, and they don't really seem, the conversation about what kind of data you're giving up is not necessarily happening when they're showing off their new iPhone to you. So it makes you feel like, oh, you know, the immediate response is, I kind of want one of those. It's sleek looking, it's snazzy, it's the latest thing out of Apple. And it doesn't immediately register what's the trade-off in that transaction.
Well, those very stoic people who have taken themselves off social media, so kudos to them.
Yeah, that they're strong. They are stronger people than I am. I have not managed to completely disconnect from social media.
Also, at the end of the day, if you see other people using it, maybe you think, what harm can come out of it, right? Because everyone's doing it.
I'm asking the question, you see, and hence our poll question, because a lot of times is very convenient and if not helping mankind as well, because like going back to Fitbit, it really has a lot of data on sleep.
This is true. So we pray for the best that the data will be used for the good of mankind.
Or humankind.
Humankind.
I feel like we've hit a point where we're just relying on the altruism of big tech companies now. And that's a little bit of a scary position to be in. Okay, thank you for all of your messages and your votes. We will be back with more stories for you after the 7 o'clock news. So stay tuned. This is Serpents by Sharon Van Etten, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.